It's really about that initial budget, being very detailed, and then making sure you keep your eyes on that at all times and making sure everybody involved keeps their eyes on it. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today. Hey, welcome back to another Hump Day Hustle. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. I'm here with John Stiles, as always. John with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Todd. My family has been out of town for a couple of weeks, and I was supposed to get a lot of work done, but they're back now, so it's good to have them back. We just enjoyed a day trip out on the river canoeing, so that was a blast. Cool. So, yeah,
I saw some pictures that you shared, I think on, on Facebook or something.
Yep.
Just glanced at them quick. Looks nice. St. Croix River, which is, always a nice river to canoe, really nice river to canoe. Actually, one of my kind of my more favorite rivers, just really, just a lot of nature around it.
So, yeah. And the water was really low, so it was
low, really.
Yeah, it was interesting. So it was a slow go. You know, it's a, if you really want to get down the river, you could do it in 2 or 3 hours. It took us like 7 or 8 hours.
We got kids, right?
Yep. We stopped at quite a few spots and got the fishing poles out.
Were you guys above the dam or below the dam?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure where the dam is, but we went from Taylor's Falls to Osceola.
From Taylor's Falls to Osceola. Okay. So you were above the dam.
Okay.
Yeah. Below the dam, well, both of them are really nice. But above the dam where you were, there's a lot of cool camping spots that you can just kind of pop off and go camp. And below, though, there's some really cool hiking. So you guys will have to try that the next time. Go from like Marina on St. Croix down to Stillwater. Those listeners who are like from out of state, are, what are you guys talking about? But beautiful. If you ever come up to Minnesota, let us know and we'll tell you where to go. So that's a great area because then you can hike the boom site area where there's just like cool limestone cliffs and stuff. And it's just really neat. So
cool.
And if the river's low, you can actually do that. When the river's high, you can't hike there because then you have to actually climb the cliffs.
Okay.
So.
How about yourself? How are you doing?
Doing well. Just had a kind of a relaxing weekend with the kids. We went out water skiing, tubing, had a little fun there. And the rest of it was just relaxing, staying around home. So we've been doing a lot of camping, a lot of traveling this summer. And it's kind of nice to be home a little bit. So. I think the next week we're home, and then we do a little trip after that. But kind of nice to relax.
Good.
Cool. So we're going to talk a little bit more, I think, today about that kind of the apartment deal. So I'll let you kind of lead off.
Yeah. So as everybody knows, you closed on that deal recently. We went into a lot of the details on the previous episode. So I was wondering if you could go into more detail about, you know, kind of what's next. You know, we know that it's a value add deal, and you've got a lot of renovation to do. We did discuss a little bit, kind of a high overview of what your plans are, but I was wondering if you can go into a little bit more detail, you know, working with those contractors and working through your scope of work. What else is going on with your next steps there?
Yeah, good question. So I think anybody who's going to do apartment purchase, value add especially, but even if you're not doing a value add, you're going to be implementing some changes into that property. And so if you have a third party property management, or if you have your own team, you need to have a good solid business plan to start with. So that's what we have is I've got like a 20 page business plan of what we're doing. There's some other stuff in that business plan, but I want to be able to tell the property manager exactly what I want out of this property. And so we can execute the plan properly, and everybody needs to know what we're doing from the start. So we've had this business plan prior to closing on the property, so everybody can be on the same page. Here's where we go. And then we have weekly calls. And so like this morning, we just had a weekly call, and we're trying to make sure we implement our business plan and do it properly. Now, we've got on this property, when we purchased it, we had quite a few vacancies. We've got 29 vacancies out of the property. And so 28 vacancies. And so we wanted to make sure that we actually renovate those units that need to be renovated. And so there was a little miscommunication this morning. Is the regional manager wanted to lease some of the units that were basically rent ready. All they needed a light turn. However, I want to renovate those units. I want to put in new vinyl planking. I want to put in new cabinets. I want to do new lighting, all that kind of stuff. Well, this is an old unit. This has the old cabinets. This has carpet. This has, but it's in good condition. You know, it's not, it, but it's still, it's from the 70s. So my, what I said is, well, look, I don't want to put anybody in those units. I only want to put people in the renovated units. Now, if we get to the position where we have some tenants all of a sudden moving out, we start getting more vacancies, then we might have to start doing that. But at this point in time, I planned on having a high amount of vacancies for the first 6 months. I planned on having that 30 vacancies for the first 6 months. So if we can continue and implement our plan, that's what I want to do. So that communication is really huge, just making sure that everybody understands their role. And I don't want to rent those units. I just don't. I want to renovate those first. Now, if we have one that has been renovated, then I want to turn it quickly and get somebody else in it.
With your weekly call, who all is on there? You mentioned the regional manager. That's from the property management company, right?
Yep. Regional manager from the property management company. And then right now it's just the, the main contact, one of the owners, main contact with the property management company as well. Okay. So those two are on every single week. And then, as needed, we'll have, the on-site, manager will be there, and potentially even the maintenance person if needed, might be on for a short period of time. And then also as needed, the general contractor will be on the phone call. We do have a separate call with the general contractor as well. And we just ensure that things are going as planned, that questions are being answered, that this property, it's nice because we have a model, perfect model unit. that we can base everything on. So it should be pretty smooth and easy. But, you know, as much as we want to say things are going to be smooth and easy, it just doesn't happen. So we got to make sure we communicate. Communication is going to be the most important ingredient to success. And you can't say it enough. I mean, I think it's so easy to think, oh, yeah, we're going to communicate well. But it needs to be scheduled. It needs to be detailed. We need to make sure every single week we're having a phone call, even though sometimes you think, I don't know what we're going to talk about today. It doesn't matter. You have to have that phone call. You have to check in, even if you don't think there's anything that's, you know, going to be burning down that we got to address. We just have to communicate clearly. We have to ask those questions. Where are we at? What do we need to do? Like today with one of my other properties, I asked the question of, you know, what are the issues at the property? What are our biggest pain points that we're seeing right now? And it was, you know, a couple little simple things that we can do, that we can make some changes to fix things. And so we want to know what our big pain points are. What can we do to fix those things? So okay, that communication is very, very, very critical for anyone. I don't care if you're managing it yourself or if you're hiring third party, either way, you need to communicate with the people that are involved. Yeah, for sure.
So with the renovation that you have going on, are you managing the contractor more, or is your property manager managing the contractor?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm doing a decent amount of management still, but my third party property management company is doing the bulk of the managing on the contractor. Sometimes I like to get more involved with the nitty gritty than I really should be, and want to try to it's just my personality to want to try to communicate with the contractor directly and just, you know, like I know what I want. I'm going to communicate with the contractor. I'm going to leave out the property manager. It's not like I'm just trying to push the property manager aside, but sometimes it's, and same thing like with the onsite, like I'm just going to call the onsite because I know what needs to be done. Instead of doing that, I got to make sure I step back and I got to involve, you know, the right people at the right time. So that's a challenge for me, that I have to make sure that instead of just communicating directly with the contractor, if I need to talk with the contractor, that's fine. But I'm going to also include my property manager with that phone conversation. So we'll just set up a conference call. And that way my property manager at least can be involved in it and understand what's going on and where otherwise they're left out. And it's so easy for me to do, like I said, because I'm just like, I'll just give him a call real quick. I've got his number, so why not just call him? So, but yeah, communicating through with the property manager, third party property manager is really important, and make sure they're involved.
And then, I don't know if you can go into this detail, but does your property management company have a different pricing structure when they're handling capital improvements versus just routine maintenance?
Yep. So big project like this, they're going to charge a general contractor fee. Yeah. And quite frankly, they don't need to, that's not part of the deal. If you don't want them to, so you don't have to make them, you know, they don't have to be a part of it at all, but if they're going to be a part of it, they're going to help make sure materials are ordered and on site and make sure colors are right and make sure the general contractor's doing their job and all that kind of stuff, then they're going to charge a GC fee on top. So, so it's kind of however, you know, you want to do it as a property owner. If you're going to be there and be local and be on site and that's what you want to handle and do, you could probably just get by with not paying them, but that, I guess that's kind of, you know, where do you want to spend your time?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, as far as like, you know, what do we do next? I think that's really critical to figure out what the best plan of action is. Like I said, you need that detailed business plan. You should be going through it with your property manager. You should be going through it with your contractor. You should be making sure everybody's on the same page and make sure that the plan's actually going to work. So for us right now, we're going to get the outside looking really nice. I think that's really important to start with the areas that the tenants can see, because the tenants that are currently there, there's a lot that enjoy the place, but there's a lot that are, you know, have been told a lot for a while. Because at this particular property, the old owner had done quite a bit of work, but they're also not doing some of the required work and they were going slow at it. So some of the tenants are just kind of at their wit's end with like, hey, you know, stuff's either going to happen here or I'm moving out, you know? So I think it's really important to show that we're doing stuff. So right now, this week we're starting the landscaping where we got to trim a bunch of trees back. We got to pull bushes and just do all the landscaping out in front, and around the whole building. So that's like key number one. Number two is we're going to add lighting to the property. I think that's going to be really important to add that lighting to the property. And then there's a few other little minor details on the outside, some soffit repair, fascia repair, some gutter work and stuff like that. And so it's getting that exterior in really good condition and making sure that the tenants are comfortable with that. The other thing is, the common area, which is the laundry room and the office, quite frankly, neither of those have AC or heat, which is crazy. I don't know. So we're putting in heat and AC in both of those, which will help the tenants. You know, like when I was there last, it was 90 degrees and humid, and tenants are in the laundry room sweating, you got the cameras that are in the laundry room and I'm sitting in the office and the tenants are going like this or wiping their sweat off their, you know, it's like,
we don't
need to keep it at 65 degrees in there, but if we just throw a little humidity out of that thing and even right. 78 degrees, it's better than, you know, being in there when it's 100. So,
yeah. And the laundry machines are putting off their own heat and humidity anyways.
Correct. Yeah. So it's even hotter in there. And same thing with the office, you know, she's miserable sitting in that office and she's got this little portable thing, but it only does so much. So, yeah.
Okay.
So little things like that, really, really important, I think, to get that property and people feeling comfortable. And then that presence too, and we're going to start doing some events. It's, you know, school's coming up. They've got some before school kind of parties in the community that we've been kind of advertising to try to get our community to go to. We're going to start trying to throw some parties for the community as well to try to make it just a better place to live, better community. So I think those are really important to start off as soon as possible. I wouldn't wait too long. You might want to, it might be okay to wait until after you show your presence by doing some of that exterior work or at least starting that, but I wouldn't wait much longer than that because there's just no reason for it. I think people tend to want to wait to do things thinking that everything's got to be perfect before they do it. I think you're going to help make things more perfect if you start quicker. So we're just going to start with doing some of those community events and trying to build a community.
Nice.
Yeah.
I guess another question is, how are you going to keep all of your expenses and costs under control? Because I can only imagine that when you're spending this much money and renovating this much, it can just start to feel like you're bleeding money. And, obviously you want to keep that all under control. It needs to be spent, but you want to make sure you're not doing unnecessary stuff or losing track of what's being spent.
Yeah, so. No, a really good question. I think it's really important to pre-plan. Again, it comes to pre-planning. How detailed did you get? You know, the more detailed you get, if you just have a budget for, you know, we're going to renovate the interior and it's going to cost us $622,000. Okay, what's that mean? You know, because I've got so many moving parts in the interior, what does that really mean? So I've got a breakdown of my kitchen's going to cost this much. My kitchen cabinets are going to cost this much. My countertops are going to cost this much. My sink is going to cost this much. My every little detail, you know, my light fixtures, I'm going to redo the light fixtures inside the unit. What's that going to cost? I'm going to redo the hallways. What's that cost? I'm going to do the landscaping. You know, exactly what am I going to do and what's that going to cost? And if I have that, the more detailed I have, the more accurate I can get and the more I can understand if I'm following my budget. Because then if the landscaping, if I go, I'm going to do XYZ to the landscaping, that's going to cost me $15,000. and my bids are starting to come in, and all of a sudden they're at $20,000, $18,000. And so I choose the bid for $18,000, and I don't know where I'm at, because my budget just said exterior was going to be $52,000. So whatever. Yeah, I can do the landscaping for $18,000. I got plenty of money there. But when in reality, you really don't, because everything else is going to add up, and all of a sudden you're going to be at $58,000. So if we know that XYZ land for the landscaping is going to cost us, or should cost us, $15,000, and the numbers start coming in at $18,000, we either have to trim from something else, or we have to decide to pull back a little bit on the landscaping and not do quite so much to get that down to $15,000. So it's really about that initial budget being very detailed, and then making sure you keep your eyes on that at all times, and making sure everybody involved keeps their eyes on it at all times. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't necessarily show my contractors 100% my budget. I usually dumb it down a little bit, because I have some pretty good overages. But they should know too. Like, they should know that we can't spend, you know, $15,000. If you get a bid for $18,000, sorry, $15,000 is my budget on landscaping. Can you do it for $15,000? If they say no, well, what can you do for $15,000? Because that's my budget.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So. So yeah, just trying to keep it separate too, because you've got your maintenance expenses, right? So you're still going to have your day-to-day operation expenses. It's not going to go away. So you still have that. So making sure you understand, like, when I get this big order from, you know, Home Depot or whatever my supplier is it just my renovation stuff? It should be, versus some renovation and maybe the maintenance guy needed five things, so I threw the five things for the main. That's a mess. Don't do that. Like, don't commingle maintenance with renovation. It just becomes challenging. Don't have your maintenance guy do your renovation. It just becomes challenging.
Yeah. So, are you keeping track of a lot of this? Is the property manager keeping track of all of the accounting of that, or do you have a separate accountant, or?
Nope, property manager keeps a track of that. I do have a separate bookkeeper that, you know, basically goes through all the stuff and makes sure everything was reconciled properly and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, third party property management keeps track of it. And I keep track of it too, as far as, you know, when I see I don't do anything without bids. So when I see a bid that comes in for what my landscaping came in at $12,000, my budget was $15,000. I keep track of that, you know, so I've got my budget, I've got my bill, and I've got that, you know, separate, and always we go. So I'm $3,000 ahead right now. Likely that'll get eaten up somewhere else, but I keep track of that, so I know where I'm at. Mm-hmm.
And then you get reports. Do you kind of log in daily, or do you get reports weekly, or?
Reports can happen daily. I can see what's going on daily if I want. I usually don't log in every single day. I'm looking at it on more of a weekly basis to make sure we're where we're at.
Yep. Very good.
And when you're dealing with contractors, if you're the one dealing with contractors, just make sure you understand kind of how to deal with them. We've talked about that previously. I wish I knew exactly the episode number, but it's really important not to pay the contractors prior to the work being completed. So they might want a small down payment. I would suggest let's say you got windows that you're going to order, and it's going to be $100,000 of windows, or $20,000 of windows, whatever it is. What I would do, instead of paying the window contractor, let's call it $20,000 for windows, I would pay the supplier directly. I would pay that bill. They might say, "Well, I got other costs too." Well, that's fine. You can incur some costs. You know, I'll pay for the windows. You can incur some costs once you're on site. Once you have some windows, then I'll, you know, give you a payment. But I would be careful with overpaying contractors, with paying them weekly. I wouldn't do that. I would pay them, you know, for us, we, you know, it's a once a month type of draw, or it's performance based type of draw. So, and it's actually, even if it's once a month, it's still performance based. So I would draw upon performance, not draw upon just they need a check.
Yeah. and most contractors, they lead with, well, we need 50% down.
Yeah, no, but, no thanks.
Yeah.
Go with a bigger outfit. It's going to cost you a little bit more up front, but you're not going to, well, I shouldn't say you're not going to get burned, but you've got less chance of getting burned if you go with a little bit bigger outfit that has some capacity to be able to hold some of that cost. So versus paying them 50% up front. Again, 50% up front, fine. We'll pay for materials. You don't need any money then, because you pay your guys every 2 weeks probably. So you don't need any money for the first 2 weeks minimum. So if we pay for materials up front, so I would never give somebody a down payment like that. I just wouldn't.
Yeah. Just say next.
Yeah, next. Yeah, exactly. There's plenty of contractors out there, and there's companies out there that understand that's just how you do business. You're not going to ask for a massive down payment like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good. Cool. Anything else on the renovation that you're working on right now?
No, I think that's, you know, that's about it. Excited to just hammer this thing out. We've got a little bit of demo that we started last week, waiting on some material pricing, final material pricing, and should be really hammering it out probably towards the end of this week, really going on these, you know, 28 vacant units, hopefully done with those within a few weeks, or a few months, sorry. A few weeks would be great, but... Yeah, probably 2 months.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey, I want to interrupt this episode real quick to talk to you about Nate Armstrong. Our sponsor, Nate Armstrong, he's with homeinvest.com. And you want to get to know Nate. So go to homeinvest.com and just connect with Nate. Talk to him. Learn about his operation, what he's got going on. He's a turnkey provider, and it may not be right for you, but it could be the perfect fit. So it doesn't hurt. It's a free call, free consultation, just to figure out, you know, what they do, what they have to offer. And worst case is you're going to meet a great person who's really well educated in real estate. He's done a ton of different real estate strategies, and probably he's going to teach you a little bit, even on a short conversation with him. So go to homeinvest.com and connect with Nate's company. You're definitely not going to be disappointed. It's worth it. So thanks, and we'll get back to our show.
So what's next for you in terms of, you've got this going on, but are you still looking for other properties?
Yeah, so that's always the battle, right? You buy a property and do you focus all your energy on that property, make sure everything goes well, or do you focus on still building the business? And for me, the answer is both, right? You've got to make sure the property you're currently buying and any other properties are going really, really well. You don't want to overwhelm yourself and just ignore it and push to the side and start looking for that next shiny object. But you also don't want to hinder your business growth either by only focusing on these properties, because quite frankly, for me, if I'm not growing, it's why do it, you know? So for me, I'm looking at my next property. I'm also putting a lot of focus on my current property. So I schedule everything. I've been time blocking everything and you know, I'm putting aside quite a bit of time for these current projects that I have going on. I'm committing a lot of time to that. And then I'm also committing time to finding my next property as well. So it's in my time block to commit time to both, to make sure I'm treating both my current investments fairly and my hopefully new investments as well, or building my business. So for me right now, I'm focusing on, my goal is to get 150 unit plus under contract. So I've been reading this book called The 12-Week Year, which John, you recommended. So my new year is only 12 weeks long and I'm into week number two. So I've got 11 weeks, left in my year. And my goal is to find 150 plus unit property and have it under contract before the end of this quote unquote year. So that's on my goal, to put 150 plus unit property under contract.
Nice. And has your search criteria changed at all in over the last few months as just things have developed? Or
yeah, so let's just go back over the last, like, let's call it year and a half. My search criteria has drastically changed over the last, let's call it, year and a half. Right now, I've got pretty much no interest in buying a property unless I know I can get some scale to it. So that's why I'm looking at 150 plus units. There's a lot of value in properties that are 20 to 30 units. Don't get me wrong. I think I've spoken about that in the past, and maybe we'll cover that again in the future. So there's still a lot of value in those properties, but right now my focus is on 150 plus unit buildings. And that was not my focus. 12 to 16 months ago was definitely not my focus. Would I have liked a 150 unit building? Yeah. But I was also looking at, 40 unit buildings and 30 unit buildings and stuff like that. So I was looking at kind of the gamut. Right now I've decided just to more narrow my focus down, 150 plus. And that way the other little properties that come by, I just pass on them. And they could be good deals. I could be passing on some good deals. Now, if a 100 unit deal came by and I looked at, or 120 unit deal came by, would I look at it? Yeah, absolutely. I won't just ignore those, but I'm not focusing solely on them, trying to find them. So I'm not searching them out. I'm searching out 150 plus. So yeah, it continues to change and evolve. And it's always going to.
Yep. And one point of clarification, often the 150 unit or whatever it is, it might not be one specific structure. It might be kind of a complex or several buildings that are together.
Yep.
Correct?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Right now I'm offering on 150 plus and I reached out to the broker. There's this 150 plus unit building. And then there's also, I think like a 20 some unit. And then there's also a 100 unit. And then there's also, I think, like a 30 unit. And they're all kind of clustered together. And I said, look, let's offer on all of them. They're different complexes, but they're all contiguous. So if I could buy all of them, now we, are looking at, I think, all together just over 300 units, which would be nice. Now, would I do the deal if I got less? Yeah, I would do it. I wouldn't do it if I just got the 24 or whatever that is, or the 30-ish. I wouldn't do it if I just got those. But if I got, the 100, the 150 plus, or, a combination of some of the others, I'd do the deal. So.
Nice. So what about geographically? Are you staying in the same areas?
Yeah, so that's another good question. I've been thinking about that a lot lately. There are other markets I really do like, but you got to be careful of spreading yourself too thin. So I'm always kind of intrigued with other markets, with potential partnerships with people that are in those markets. So I am looking in other markets, I haven't really done a ton of, I guess, relationship building yet and a ton of research. I haven't been on the ground at some of these other markets, but yeah, I'm looking at some in the Southeast. I'm looking at a market in the West. So I'm definitely still kind of looking around. I do like a market just south of us, Des Moines. So I kind of look around. I always have my kind of sensors on and trying to find, other markets. But at the same time, you got to be careful that you don't just chase a shiny object just because it's a shiny object, right? Mm-hmm. So I still fundamentally believe a lot in the markets that I'm in. I think they're good, really great markets. The biggest challenge I see in the markets that I'm in isn't necessarily the opportunity. It's the amount of properties that I'm finding for sale.
Yep.
That owners are willing to sell.
So, yeah, that seems to be a challenge in quite a few places.
Yeah, it's funny because in some places it's not. I mean, I've got a friend who invests in the Texas market and in one of the major cities, and he just gets hammered with deals. I mean, they're all over the place, and he's analyzing and looking at deals every day, and he's keeping underwriters busy. And I mean, there's just properties all over the place. Now, is every one of them good? No, definitely not. You know, most of them aren't good, but you know, he's able to continually write offers on properties and at least, you know, be kind of in the ballpark on many of them. And he just got another decent sized property accepted. I just don't see that very much. I don't have so many properties that I can't keep up on the underwriting and that kind of stuff. And so it's every market's different, right? On how many properties are being like Twin Cities, for instance, where we're at, there's just not a lot of properties being offered for sale that are 100 plus units. Whether it's off market, on market, there's just not a lot of people that want to sell. I mean, we had a meeting the other day and that's kind of, that was the, one of the things they said, there's just, we can't convince people to sell their properties, even though they got a ton of equity. We just can't convince them to sell their properties.
Yep.
So, but you got to look at traditionally what's the Twin Cities been. It's local people buying properties and keeping them for 50 years. That's just how it is here. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep. And then another point about your search criteria, obviously you're still focusing in on value add opportunities.
Yeah, for me, that's the only way I'm going to create what I need to create to be able to buy properties in this type of market environment. You know, there's whole questions on where we're at in this market cycle. For me, does that matter? Yes, it does. But to more of an extent than where we are in the market, it's about buying that property right. So if we do have a market correction, you're insulating yourself, you're capitalizing it well, and you're doing the things you need to do to create the income to be able to withstand a market correction.
So
the value is an extremely important part of that.
Nice.
Yeah.
So if somebody has a deal that they think would meet your criteria, how should they send it to you?
Yeah, good question, actually, because I would pay a finder's fee, or you know, allow potentially a partnership, depending on what that looks like. And you know, obviously, I don't want to promise partnerships because that's different. You know, I would partner with certain people. I just wouldn't partner with other people, and not even necessarily because I don't like them. Just is there that correct synergy maybe? And just is it a good situation for everybody? But yeah, if anybody has a property, they want to send it to me. Probably the easiest way is to reach out on my website, venturedproperties.com. You can reach out and you can connect, and then we can start a dialogue. 100 plus unit property, but 150 would be better. I would look in, you know, the kind of Southern Ohio, Cincinnati kind of markets, Indianapolis markets, Louisville markets, Lexington market. And I would also look in, of course, in the Twin Cities. And then the other market would be Southeast, kind of the Carolinas. I'd look there definitely as well. So the bigger markets in Carolinas, Raleigh and Greensboro, and some of the bigger markets, or decent-sized markets at least.
How do you define decent size? Certain population?
Or? Yeah, I like an overall MSA of 500 plus. 500 okay. plus thousand people, not 500 people. 500,000 plus people overall MSA. Preferably a million, but you know, I'll look at the 500,000.
Okay.
And a growing MSA as well. So.
Right.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I think that's good for this week. We'll maybe continue on and talking. I really like being able to talk about, you know, kind of apartments and what we're really needing to make to be successful in them. Cause I think there's a lot. It's an easy business, but it's also a difficult business as well and with challenges. So.
Yep. Well, very good. If anybody here has been, who has been listening or watching, has a comment or a question, we'd love to hear from you. Just scroll down either on the YouTube video or on SoundCloud, wherever it is you're listening, and we'd love to get your comment there. And while you're at it, love to have your review and positive feedback there as well. So,
cool. Now, also, I should shout out to a few people. I'm going to, this will come out right before I go, so I don't know if there'll be time to sign up or not, but I'm going to be speaking at in a panel at Rod Cleef's event in Chicago this weekend. It's multifamily, I can't remember the name of it, but if you just Google Rod Cleef, he actually is on the podcast just today, the day we're recording. So on Monday, episode 90, correct, John?
Yeah.
So he's episode 90, so you can listen to him, but he's got his event I'll be at on a panel on Saturday. And then I'm also going to the Multifamily Mastery with Jake and Gino and going to be on a panel there as well. I think it's Sunday. So I think that's October 6th and 7th. So I'm kind of excited for both those events. Just to be part of them, and they've both been gracious enough to invite me on and just to, you know, I guess give a little bit of my insight, which is, you know, definitely humbling to have. But so if anybody is going to those events, or if you want to go to those events, sign up and reach out. Let me know if you're going. I'd love to connect with you if you are going to be at one of them.
Very cool. Congratulations.
Thanks. Awesome, man. Well, I think that's it. You got anything else?
I think that's it.
All right, man. Well, have a great rest of the day. Make every day a Saturday.
You too.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.